panel will ask to come forward is Sharon Bremmer, Dana DeMaster, and Betty Haas. And before you start, I'll just say that it's my intent, and I don't know when the chairman will come back, but it's my intent to at least go through 5 p.m. today for a hearing. We may go past 5 if that's the will of the chairman and we can keep enough members here to make it worthwhile. I would ask panel members, if at all possible, to limit your comments to just a few minutes each. If there are, I know there are some of you out there who had signed up to testify, if you believe your point has been eloquently made by some other person, you may wish to waive testifying, but certainly it's your right, and if you feel like you want to be heard, we'll certainly accommodate you as a committee. And for your name, each of you, when it's your turn to speak, if you'd please just state your name for the record.
Okay, I am Sharon Brenner. Members of the committee, I'm Sharon Brenner. I'm a career homemaker, a community volunteer, and the mother of 2 daughters. And I'm here today to urge your opposition to House Bill 2633. My perspective on this legislation is based on what I remember from when my daughters and their friends went through their teen years. I was a full-time stay-at-home mom. My husband and I considered being parents our greatest joy and our greatest responsibility. Although our own daughters are grown now and would no longer be affected by this legislation, I feel strongly that we need to share all our views and listen to every voice in order to make the most effective laws and avoid unintended consequences, which could hurt the very people you are trying to help. We can all agree that every parent wants the opportunity to love, advise, and support their child. In an ideal world, that would happen. But we do not live in an ideal world. Teenagers have sex too young. They often fail to use contraception. Sometimes that contraception fails. These realities would not be changed by this legislation. Nor can this legislation change the fact that some young women, even in the most loving and supportive families, simply will not share their pregnancy with their parents. These are the young women I have known personally. They're good students, athletes, involved in their schools. When they get pregnant, their greatest worry is sometimes not the pregnancy itself, but the disappointment that they will bring their parents. Legislation will not force them to tell their parents. They deny their situation, they delay taking any action, and ultimately they may resort to desperate measures to avoid the embarrassment they will bring to their parents and to maintain their privacy. They will not go through the obstacles of any bypass. They may even deny themselves a safe, legal abortion just to avoid telling their parents. However well-intended, this legislation is a misguided attempt to force family communication. It could have disastrous consequences. I'm not suggesting that's right. That's just reality. Parents cannot always predict how their daughters will behave. I'm sure a great many are surprised when they find out that their teenagers are sexually active. As heartbreaking as it is not to have your child confide in you, that heartbreak would pale in comparison to losing a daughter because she was so desperate to keep her privacy that she put herself in an unsafe situation. Please reject this dangerous, unnecessary piece of legislation. It is not worth risking the life or the health of even one young woman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Brenner. Please, Ms. DeMaster.
My name is Dana DeMaster. I'm entering the testimony of Barbara Alberti onto the record. Ms. Alberti is the chairperson of the YWCA of Greater Portland Board of Directors. The YWCA Board of Directors is extremely concerned about the possibility of required parental notification for abortion. As an organization, the YWCA's loyalty stands behind women and the protection of women. The YWCA provides services for teen parents and at-risk youth whose safety and well-being could be compromised by the passing of this law. We support a young woman's right to make choices about her own life and body, and the importance of availability of quality health care. The YWCA of Greater Portland's programs work to prevent family dysfunction and unwanted pregnancies by building self-esteem, providing life skills education, offering counseling on parenting, and fostering healthy parental involvement wherever possible. A law like this would seriously impede the empowerment of women. Studies show that 23% of young women seeking abortions would not tell their parents. It is essential for these women to maintain confidentiality over their decisions. For many young women, informing their parents would result in physical or emotional abuse. We are extremely concerned about the possibility of parental notification leading to the abuse and homelessness of young women, as well as forcing them to start families in poverty and against their will. In conclusion, we are in strong opposition to parental notification on the issue of abortion. The only true possession in the world is our body. It is vital every woman maintain the right to control decisions involving her body. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where would you like us to leave our copies?
Oh, Mr. Felton will take them from you. Looks like there's more here.
There's a whole bunch more coming. Oh, yeah.
Next time, if you'll just, as you come up, show that you've got some written testimony. Mr. Felton will get it distributed before you testify.
Okay, we're sorry.
Oh, no problem.
I'm Betty McChesney House with Public Policy for American Association University Women. I am here to express our concern about House Bill 2633, which would require a doctor to notify a girl's parent if she seeks abortion services, as well as provide for at least a 48-hour waiting period before this legal medical procedure could be performed. Contrary to what you may have been told, this bill will not strengthen families. And instead of reading the whole testimony to you, I'd like to go down to the bottom, where it shows the 1990 voters of Oregon rejected a similar parental notification law, and it shows you how the percentage that was defeated in the different counties. We also state that the government cannot mandate healthy family communications where it does not already exist. I have recently retired as a high school teacher here at in Salem. I worked with Vic Backlund, Representative Backlund, at McNary High School for 25 years. And during that time, I worked a part of it with special ed. And in that special ed program, we had a relationships class. And we dealt with a lot of the children, should we say, or the young people that would be involved with this. And we tried to teach them good relationships, even if they did not have them at home, how to establish them in the future with their families that they were about to acquire, and how to relate with their children so that they would have a good, healthy communications. It was based on a communications model. I would also like to tell you that the other schools in the state of Oregon do have relationship classes for the regular population of the school, and most have some sort of a class that deals with the special ed population and relationships and communications. So it's not like we're avoiding the issue. We are working towards it throughout the state. And we certainly do foster good relationships and communications within families. American Association of University Women, I was president 10 years ago. I'm the incoming president of the Salem branch this year. 10 years ago, we established in this community a program called Mothers and Daughters Choices. And this also is a communications-based program. And we work with and mentor young girls and their mothers in making these types of basic choices on up through these more complicated ones, and how to establish a good relationship so that they can communicate problems as well as the good times and the bad times with their parents. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay, thank you. I just want to apologize for my absence here. Check where we are on the list.
I'll go ahead.
You'll go, you finish this panel. That's fine.
Are there any questions for the panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Give me just a moment to update the chairman on where he is on his list. It's a little confusing. So.
Let's bring up, is it Judy Newport? Newport? Thank you. And Ellie Jenny? Okay, thank you. We'll take that. And has had Christina Byrne. Velma Hartwig. Welcome, if you want to go ahead.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. And thank you for allowing me to speak. It was this morning early, about 3 a.m., that I decided somebody was nudging me to come down here and share some thoughts with you. I'm a wife. I'm a parent of four children, grown now. I'm a grandparent, and I'm an aunt of fine nieces and nephews. And when I heard about House Bill 2633, I just really wanted to come down and share my feelings with you. First of all, I noticed that medical procedure has been brought up, and that all parents are notified if their child needs a tonsillectomy, if their child needs any surgery in particular. And when we look at abortion, abortion is a medical procedure, and there is a negative force in every abortion, and that is there is a death involved in every abortion. Sometimes it is the mother, but most certainly it is the baby. And the baby has not been talked about very much today. It's mostly the unwed mother, the parents. But what have we talked about the future? Our future grandchildren, our future senators, congressmen, doctors, lawyers. Nothing has been said about these children, and they are living human beings from conception on. As a parent, I was involved in the issue of abortion before it even became legalized, while it was still being talked about. And so I've been familiar with the ins and outs, both sides of this, for over 20 years. And I want to share with you that I've also had the privilege of talking throughout these years with young people who have come by me. First, right after the abortion issue was resolved into this horrendous law. And there were high school students. It was heavily debated in the high schools where we were living. And the children started coming to me and saying, what can you give us on this law? Somehow it got around that my husband and I had been involved in studying about this law. And so we would give them facts, and they would take back the facts, what they were to study. And in some cases, the students came back very dejected and said that when they gave their reports, the teachers had torn their papers and thrown them into the wastebasket and said that it wasn't true what they had to say. Another point is that I have crossed paths with women who have gone through abortion and have wanted to spend time with me and pray with me. And this brings me to a point that has not been brought up, is that our country was founded on godlike principles. We pray before every session, before you start, when you start your day in the morning. And we are leaving out what God's desire is for every human being. Now, granted, there are some instances when conception occurs not in the most pleasant situations, but God has the power of taking human life and the worst of circumstances and making the best of circumstances. And one story I love to tell is our two Rubenstein. Now, maybe this is a little out of your age bracket, but he was a world-famous classical pianist. And he often told the story how his mother, when found she was pregnant with him, wanted to have an abortion. And it was her sister who encouraged her to keep the baby, who now has turned out to be one of the greatest memories on the face of the earth of this classical world-round pianist. And so, in conclusion, because I agree with the pro-life stand, after much weighing and discerning throughout my lifetime, that God has a master plan for even the most unlikely circumstances. There's an old saying that out of the darkness shall come the light. and that God allows conception and has a plan for that life. And if we don't allow that life to come forth, even if it is from an unwed mother or of a woman who is married and maybe has 3 or 4 children and is undecided whether she can handle another baby, there is adoption. There is open adoption and there is closed adoption. There are other options. And we also must give credit to parents out there who are unable to be here or who may not have known that this hearing was taking place, that I know would have loved to have been here and said, I will help my daughter. I will help my daughter. And we cannot speak for the future. Only God can. But what we can speak for is say, trust in God, like is said throughout our government. Day in and day out, it is etched in our money. And if we do not trust in God, we cannot trust in anything. And we must remain objective, we must remain open, and also give credit to parents who may face trauma at knowing their child is pregnant. Yes, but give them the credit that through prayer and us praying and working together to educate these parents on programs that are already available through state programs and through churches. Now, in the Catholic Church, there's Northwest Family Services and Catholic Charities who have chastity programs. They have teenagers involved in chastity skits that will go to anyone who wants to hear them. They have retreats for mother-daughter, father-son, family, father-daughter, mother-son, to promote the sanctity of life and to promote sexual awareness is not a moment of 20 minutes of rapture and elation, but sexuality is our entire life from conception until natural death. And so I thank you for this time to encourage you to vote in favor of House Bill 2633.
Thank you, Ms. Newport. Ms. Hartwood, thank you for coming down from Mary's Peak Road to get here today.
Harlan doesn't have its own post office. That's why I put Harlan in parentheses. As a mother of 8 children, 3 daughters and 5 sons, I can tell you that a 16-year-old is not a woman. She is a delightful, opinionated, emotional, sometimes airheaded child. They need their families. This is not a thing to get families together. This is something to protect the children. Unfortunately, in the school systems, when our children receive sexual education, they are not told that this is a living being. This is nothing but a blob of tissue. This is not living. It has nothing, it has no future, has nothing. And these children are told how to get contraceptives, and they're told how to get abortions. And sometimes, even through the schools, they can plan to have an abortion. They're encouraged not to talk to their parents. And I found this with my daughter, and thank God she did not get into drugs or alcohol after she had the abortion. But she shut down emotionally for several years. And that was maybe worse. But we have to... I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Take a minute.
We have to protect our children. This is to get the family involved. She was told so many times by her peers and by her counselors, so-called, don't tell your family. It's your decision. You're a woman now. And years later, she told me. And we would have understood. And we would have stood by her. We would have supported her, no matter what her decision was. But she had to go through this alone, and it still tortures her. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hartman. I want to make sure that I have the right panel next. I think it's Paula Dulac and Nancy Jackson and Mary Demarest. Carrie Ortman is not, okay. Welcome. I'll let you decide who goes first. Please state your name for the record.
Go ahead. I'm Mary Demarest. I'm a resident of Corvallis. I want to thank Representative Shetterly and the committee for this opportunity to testify and the committee's endurance this afternoon. I'm a parent. I've been a women's rights activist for over 28 years. I'm affiliated with several organizations. Today I'm speaking for myself. I want us to remember that we're not talking about psychological theories or statistics or parental property rights. We're talking about real, breathing, living human beings who are at a time in their lives when they are socially, physically, and economically very vulnerable. By the close of this hearing, you will have heard from numerous witnesses who will tell you that mandatory parental notification is not in the best interest of teen women or of their families. Many will remind you that Oregon voters rejected mandatory parental notice for abortion in 1990. I'm not going to address the myriad problems with mandatory notice laws, especially in a state with no possibility of private court action. Instead, I will address the place of such legislation in the ongoing abortion debate that has gripped this country for more than 25 years. It's a smokescreen. If you've listened carefully this afternoon, you will have heard a number of people testify that parents need to be involved in a young woman's abortion decision in order to prevent the abortion. They have lamented not that the abortion, that a choice was made, but in each case, lamented that the choice was abortion. In addition, we've been in the ironic situation of hearing testimony from representatives of organizations who intend, if they have their way, to ban all or nearly all abortions, talk solicitously of expeditious access for young women. Parental notice and other restrictive abortion legislation has been conceived of and promulgated by people who wish to ban all or nearly all abortions. Since stopping all abortions is consistently rejected by the courts, legislatures, and most importantly by the people of the United States, anti-abortion strategists settle for stopping any abortion that they can. Knowing that Americans are pro-choice, anti-abortion strategists are constantly seeking any restriction that they can sell to the public and pass the courts. Ask any sponsor of this bill under what circumstances they feel abortion is justified. The answer will be few to none in all instances. Ask what public policies they support to reduce teen pregnancy rates. In few cases will that response be very impressive either. HB 2633 is not motivated by concern for young women whose lives it will most intimately affect. It is designed cynically to manipulate our concern for youth in an attempt to reduce the number of abortions without doing anything to reduce the need for abortion. I repeat, this bill seeks to reduce the number of abortions without doing anything like supporting contraception or sex education or high aspirations for young women to reduce the need for abortion. Please do not send this exploitative and counterproductive legislation to the floor. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Hello. My name is Paula Dulac. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I come as a representative of the YWCA. I'm going to make my remarks very brief. I can add very little to what people have said. But on behalf of the YWCA of Greater Portland strives to promote physical and emotional health for all women, no matter what their age. We are concerned that this bill will result in young women being placed in dangerous situations, which could result in emotional damage and or physical violence to them. The YWCA has a long history of dealing with teenagers, teen parents, and youth at risk. They are teenagers in our programs who come from abusive and dysfunctional families. For them, the requirement of mandatory parental notification before an abortion could put them in danger. Telling a parent of a pregnancy to meet the requirement of mandatory notification may place the young woman at risk of emotional and/or physical abuse. 3/4 of the children of the teens already notify their parents. We're concerned about this 1/4. 1/4 have good reasons for not telling them. In some, there's a fear that the parent will not accept the teenager's decision not to become a parent. Some parents may feel that their teenager must complete the pregnancy to take the consequences of her actions. Some of these, 1/4 of these young women come from abusive and dysfunctional family. These women may face emotional damage or physical violence. Some of the women come to this, in this situation, a result of rape. Even in situations where young women do not need to fear or are afraid of being abused by their parents, the fear of disappointing them is great. For all of the above reasons, required parental notification may result in a young woman not telling her parents until it's too late, which brings you into the issue of the second trimester abortion. The YWCA of Greater Portland wishes to promote physical and emotional health of all women. We recognize that a teenager can get pregnant, receive prenatal care, and deliver the baby without parental notification or permission. The woman can have the baby without notifying her parents. We want you to give her the choice. Women need the ability to make this choice. In summary, the YWCA of Greater Portland promotes good health and well-being of women of all ages. What I want to now say is an individual. I think I'm probably one of the older people in this room. I come to you working on the board of directors of the YWCA. I've been an advocate, I think, all my life for those who don't have things working well. I was a teacher. I've worked with women when I was in Nevada, and I'm working with this. You know, each one of us in our lives does the best that we can do, whether it's a teenager or a parent. We have to give people choices. We do only that which we think is the best at time. Looking back 5, 10 years, 20 years, we can say my life, I would have done it differently. But in situations such as this, this is not a rational situation. This is a situation where we do the best we can. And I wish that this bill will not allow people to do that which may be the best for them at this time. So, again, going back to our statements here, we are concerned that this bill is the result of bill replaced women in a very dangerous situation. We urge you not to pass it. Thank you. Thank
you. Okay. My name is Nancy Jackson, and I'm the board chair of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. The Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice is a national and statewide organization. It was first founded in 1973. It was founded by clergy and lay people who saw sisters and wives and people of their congregation and nieces and grandparents all suffer from the horrors of backstreet illegal abortions. That's what made this coalition come together, and it has been active since then for 26 years now. Our members come from mainline Protestant denominations such as the United Methodists, the Presbyterians USA, the United Church of Christ, Catholics for a Free Choice, Unitarian Universalists, the Reconstructionists, the Reform, and the conservative movements of the Jewish faith, and from other faith-based groups such as American Baptist Witness for Choice and Episcopal Women's Caucus, to name just a few. I'm not here today to tell you what God's feelings or what God says on this, because frankly I have not had the opportunity to talk to God personally. But I am here to advocate for religious freedom. And I am here to tell you that the best scientific, legal, and religious minds have never, to my knowledge, and I'd like to hear if anyone else has it firsthand, have never been able to agree when life begins, number one, or what people's choices should be. That's why in America we have a principle called religious freedom, where people are to make their own choices. I'm going to skip over a lot of my testimony today because it's been said far better than I would be able to do why we feel this bill is dangerous, one fits all legislation. But I do want to tell you as a person, I am 61 years of age. I've been a social worker for many, many years. So far today, I've heard a lot of horror stories from witnesses about what has happened to them at clinics. And then I've heard agencies get up and deny and say this isn't true, that that didn't happen at these clinics. I worked as a social worker in California for 18 years. I have worked since then in this movement from a religious basis. I have accompanied women, and I have accompanied young girls with their mothers, and I have accompanied some teenagers to these clinics. I have never, ever seen these clinics deny them access to information about all the different options open to them, including adoption, including keeping their children, and including abortion. I don't know where these stories are coming from. I have talked to these women about post-abortion trauma, so-called. Most of them are so relieved to have this over and behind them. I have talked to most of the young girls that come in with their mother. I have talked to them together. And I would just reiterate what you have heard today. If it comes from an intact, happy family, they have their parents with them. If they don't come from an intact, happy family, the horror stories are absolutely true about incest and abuse and fear as the reasons why they do not tell their parents why. We from the faith community are often silent on this issue, and we are trying to correct that. We are trying very hard. We are out there advocating for prevention. As has been mentioned by the two ladies who just testified before me, let's talk about prevention. Let's talk about contraception. Let's talk about access to the health care that we all need instead of about abortion. I would certainly agree with the witnesses who would say that in other states that have passed this parental notification that you've seen abortions go down. But what does that really mean? When they don't have access to abortion services, yes, those abortions will go down. But look what it means in terms of unwanted children. Look what it means in terms of child abuse. Look what it means in terms of social problems that we are having to face. So then speaking for this often silent majority of the faith community to say, we don't think it's needed. We think it is very, very bad. We think this bypass procedure is just a very blatant attempt to put another structure between young people and their choice. After all, they are the ones that will be responsible for that child for the rest of their lives, not their parents who might be forcing them to carry that child when they do not want to. We urge you most strongly to oppose HB 2633. Thank you for letting me testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Representative Wells.
Thank you. I'd like to ask, anyone can answer this question coming from your group, but what do you really feel is the real motive behind this type of legislation, knowing that we do have this battle out there? I don't know. You said that majority of the Americans are pro-choice. I know in the political world, we kind of, in Oregon, or whatever, we kind of look at about 50-50, but I don't know where we are if we had a nationwide poll on this issue, but what do you see as the real motive behind this type of legislation from your viewpoint? Is it to reduce abortions? Is it to harass Planned Parenthood? Is it to somehow falsely feel that they're encouraging family communications? What do you see as the real motive in this type of legislation?
I don't think you can say that there is only one motive in this legislation. I think, and here I am speaking as an individual, not from the religious coalition, I think it's time that we in government start looking at an issue I would call population politics. I think we have to start looking at who benefits from population growth. I think we have to start looking at things like cheap labor, like filling our malls, our shopping malls with shoppers. Women are not just baby-producing machines. We know that churches quite often, and I'm not talking about just one particular church, but there are many churches that benefit from population growth. When you tell your population that you cannot use contraception, that you cannot have abortions, that you cannot have access to anything, your population is going to grow. So is your strength, so is your money. So that's one reason, but I'm not saying it's the only one. I'm saying I think that this whole thing is a multifaceted problem that we as Americans need to look at. We are people of faith. We want to encourage families. We want to encourage families that want their children. We would like to see every child born a wanted blessed child. That is not going to happen. And why are we as a culture so anxious, it appears, to force people to have children that they do not want, do not feel able to care for, and do not want? I think that's what we have to start asking ourselves.
Can I comment briefly? I really believe people do that which they think is the best. I think there are some people who believe that this legislation will encourage people to talk. Well, I think they should talk before the children have sex. Now, that's one idea. The other thing is, the other thing is the idea that people really think it would reduce the number of abortions. I don't. I think that this is a desire to make the problem go away, but it won't. We need to do something way, way, way before this. And so I think we want to mandate that people change. You can't do that by doing this. You've got to, it's got to start 5, 10, 15 years back, not when they're 15.
And I might throw this in. I'm an old lady. I'm 61 years old. I can show you a statistic. The rate of teenage pregnancy was higher in 1958 than it is today. Here in Marion County, it's 26 per 100. Our culture has changed. Back then, if a girl got pregnant, she got married. There was a shotgun marriage or whatever. But on the other hand, that young man who was marrying her could go out and make a living for that couple, being a shoe salesman or whatever. Our culture has changed. We can no longer do those things. We have had the woman's movement which is advocating for more equal marriages. Our whole life is a different one today. And these children who are reaching puberty earlier and earlier, if they did everything that our culture told them to do, would be celibate from the age of eight or nine now. Girls are starting their periods to when they finish college at 22. That's a long time, so sexual mores are changing. Many of our faith groups are trying to answer these issues. We are working in our churches as hard as we can to advocate for sexuality education, to advocate for abstinence skills of how to say no, to teach our people how to look at relationships. If I had my druthers, we would spend maybe half an hour on contraception, because that's all it would take to really tell people. But we would spend time with our young people talking about relationships, what it means, the hurt involved. I can sit here and tell you 100 reasons not to be sexually active. We are not out there saying, let's everybody go out and have a wild time. We are not advocating that. But we are saying, let's get real. Our teenagers these days are, for the most part, sexually active. Many, many of them are, far too many. Let's help those young people be responsible. And the only way to do that is to have sexuality education in our schools and low-cost preventive services out there for them if they are sexually active. Right along with that, do everything we can to help our families as much as we can.
Representative Shetterly?
Sure, Demarest.
Well, I'd like an opportunity to address Representative Wells' question because I raised the issue. If you look at American politics around abortion issues since Roe versus Wade, you'll see a very concerted strategizing. Now, I'm going to say that there's a difference between motivation oftentimes on the part of individuals who may be here testifying or who are voting in the voters' booth, but in terms of the strategies that have been promulgated to ban abortion. When the courts have said that abortion will remain legal, what we have seen is a move to look at what restrictions can we get the people to buy and the courts to allow. Some, such as Randall Terry, have gone so far as to say we will ban abortion one procedure at a time. The first and hardest hit, and fortunately not in Oregon, have been poor women who were the first to lose full access. Young women are faring very poorly around this country. I think it's been stated several times there are 21 states where a young woman with a problem family and a problem pregnancy has very few choices. I would not like to see that happen in Oregon. I'd like us to keep the law the way it is that gives doctors, parents, and young people a good balance for the safety of the young women involved.
Representative Wibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, one comment. I'm 60, but I don't consider myself an old lady.
I do.
The other comment, a little history. I think, does us all well to remember. It's absolutely true that the percent of young women getting pregnant is probably not much different now than it was in the 50s when I was around. But actually, many of them did not get married. Those who could talk to their parents went to visit Aunt Susie and Uncle Joe to help them out at home, and that was usually always for 9 months, and or went to the Florence Crittenden homes, which were all over the United States, or those who could not talk to their parents had the illegal abortions that used to come into my emergency room when I was working as a nurse, and I would never want to go back to that situation.
And those of us who are this age remember those times, and we've talked to those people, and we've seen the pain that they went through. Let's not return to that again.
Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You hit the mother lode here. We're all weighing in. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr.
Not
Chairman.
Not you, ma'am.
I'm the mother lode.
No.
You are in such trouble.
Was that an inappropriately timed remark? I apologize.
More on that later. Mary, if I may ask you a question. You, just for the sake of protecting the record and laying down the history that we need to in order to understand the ups and downs of all of this, you started to give us a little history of this, of how the voters have reacted to this issue. And you mentioned the 1990 election when the voters rejected mandatory parental notification. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, and if you recall the specifics of that ballot measure?
I'm not sure what the question is. I mean, I served on several committees working against that ballot measure.
Yeah, I know you did.
And,
but I'm interested in learning a little bit more about the history of, I know that these issues have come up from time to time in elections. And if you could sketch out for me a little bit of the history so that...
I know that that particular bill, particular ballot measure was brought by signature from Oregon Right to Life, that there was another ballot measure at the same time from sponsored by the Oregon Citizens Alliance, which would have unconstitutionally banned all abortion in Oregon, all three trimesters. Further than that, right now, without going back to campaign notebooks, I really couldn't tell you too much more.
That's a good point that we can have council take a look at that and bring us back that information.
I do know that this body has also rejected parental notification twice in the past.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, I wondered if there was a substantial similarity between the 1990 issue that the Oregon voters acted on and this bill, if there's any similarity.
With all the changes that were announced at the beginning of this hearing that I haven't had a chance to read and compare, I couldn't comment.
All right, thanks. Let's move on to the next panel. Actually, it's not a panel. I'm going to bring up Bob Castagna. Are you still in the room? Oh, there he is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. The conference is the public policy office of the Archdiocese of Portland and the Diocese of Baker, and represent the Catholic bishops in service to the Catholic people of Oregon, about 300,000 people. We want to go on the record today in support of House Bill 2633. Parents have a natural right and a responsibility to be involved in the important life decisions of their minor children. And parents should know of their teenage daughter's desire to have an abortion. Abortion results in the taking of the unborn baby's life with the accompanying physical and emotional injury to the minor girl. I'd like to read a couple of quotes from some U.S. Supreme Court decisions. The intangible fibers that connect parent and child have infinite value. They are woven throughout the fabric of our society, providing it with strength, beauty, and flexibility. It is self-evident that they are sufficiently vital to merit constitutional protection in appropriate cases. Lehrer v. Robertson, a 1983 case. Indeed, the Constitution protects the sanctity of the family precisely because the institution of the family is deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition. It is through the family that we inculcate and pass down many of our most cherished values, moral and cultural. In this difficult issue area, the general rule should be that parents have a right to be involved in their children's lives. No one should take that right away from them. Hard cases make bad law, but we don't build the general rubric of society around the hard cases. Thank you.
Comments or questions from the committee? Thank you, Bob. I have Paula Crane and Linda Doyle.
Thank you.
You bet.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, thank you very much for having us today. My name is Linda Doyle. I'm the mother of a 12-year-old, but much of my experience in that relationship with my young daughter comes from my years of working as the teen pregnancy prevention coordinator in Multnomah County. Prevention of teen pregnancy is something that we can all agree upon. However, the countless number of stories and the young women that I've encountered over the years can't help but leave a mark on your soul and make you emotional about this issue. Studies have shown over and over again that parents are important to teens. They trust us and they rely on us to help them move through adolescence. Unfortunately, not all young girls live in such model families. We also know, though, that not all teen pregnancies are the result of abuse. Good families like yours and mine all throughout the state are dealing with this issue of teen pregnancy. I know many supporting House Bill 2633 truly believe that parental notification regarding abortion is an essential part of a healthy family. Indeed, most teens do involve their parents in resolution of their pregnancy. And members of our health care system in Multnomah County always seek to involve a parent or a trusted adult when they're dealing with counseling a young woman about her pregnancy. But many teens are fearful of hurting their parents, or they're in denial of their pregnancy, and they don't tell their parents. They lose valuable access to early prenatal care, and they wait until too late in their pregnancy. And young teens have also been known to take desperate measures to resolve their pregnancy. This bill will create one more barrier to an already tenuous situation, leading to further reductions in quality, safe health care for our young women. House Bill 2633, in my opinion, is dangerous to young women. As a parent, I am not willing to risk the safety of my child in order for me to be involved. If my husband and I have been involved from the beginning, she will ask for our help. If not, she needs to be protected. She needs to be able to seek help elsewhere without us. Family communication promoted through this bill requires more than focusing on parental notification. It requires teens feeling connected to their parents. It does not require a signature. I applaud the members of this committee for even addressing this issue to begin with. I encourage the committee, though, to look forward to a much earlier time in the lives of these young women, a time before they became pregnant, a time before they needed an abortion. We need your help, but we need it a lot sooner than the time period covered in this bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Shetterly and the committee, my name is Paula Crane, and I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I will keep this very brief because most of what I would say has already been said. The League of Women Voters is opposed to HB 2633. The League is a nonpartisan, nonprofit political organization which encourages citizen participation in government and reaches its positions on the basis of member research, study, and discussion. We appreciate the opportunity to express our opposition to this latest version of parental notification regarding reproductive health care. This bill is not a, as has been said many times, is not a healthy answer for teens. It only makes more barriers. the league urges the committee to oppose it. Thank you.
Questions for either of these two? Well, I think, Paul, Ms. Crane.
Yes.
You know, when you say, you'll be brief, and I appreciate that at this hour of the day, but by the same token, I'm going to say that I don't mind hearing witnesses. I think everybody brings their own perspective to this thing, and sometimes the same thing said for the 10th time, but just with a different twist on it, has an impact. So I do want to encourage those of you who are still on the witness list, we're still functioning under a time limit of sorts, but don't be bashful to give your testimony. We're here to hear it.
Oh.
Thank you. Now, do you want to go back and...
No, it's all written, so...
Okay, no, that's fine.
But I will add one thing that was said earlier, and this is a personal, not a league thing. I also remember and do not wish to go back to the times when, in the early 60s, I watched somebody die in my dorm room from an illegal abortion, and let's never go back to that.
Okay. I'm down my list. I have Katie Eastwood, Jillian Casson, and Maura Roach.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Katie Eastwood, and I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of Medical Students for Choice. At present, 75% of all teens notify their parents before obtaining an abortion. Studies indicate that 23% of teens would not tell their parents about the pregnancy, and in the case that there were a parental notification law, they would not go to a clinic for an abortion. The reasons these teens would not involve their parents are many, ranging from not wanting to disappoint their parents to fearing violence if their parents learned of an unplanned pregnancy. Parental notification carries a high risk of potential violence. Abortion is a safe and sanctioned medical procedure. Yet, if a teenage girl fears telling her parents about a pregnancy and parental notification laws are in effect, this medical procedure is not available to her. A devastating example of this is the case of Becky Bell. Fearing that she would disappoint her parents and hearing from friends that no judge in Indiana would grant a waiver, Becky sought and had an illegal abortion just 90 days short of her 18th birthday. 3 days later, she died of a septic infection caused by the illegal abortion. As future physicians, we fear that House Bill 2633 would compromise the right to safe health care for teenage girls. Having a first trimester abortion is safe. The risk of dying is 0.5 per 100,000 procedures, 1/20th that of carrying a pregnancy to term and giving birth. The risk of complication increases with gestational age. Parental notification laws would increase the gestational age at which abortions would be performed for teens. Not only would it take longer for a teenager to risk telling her parents, it would also take longer for a teenager to get a waiver. This law would increase the risk of complications from abortions. This is not acceptable to us as medical professionals. Parental notification is not required for any medical, dental, or hospital treatment for minors age 15 and above. At any age, a teen may consent for treatment of sexually transmitted infections and for contraceptive information and services. If House Bill 2633 were passed, it would be easier for a teen to carry a pregnancy to term with full prenatal care and a C-section without a parent's knowledge or support than it would be for her to have a legal and safe abortion. If a teen is considered competent to consent to a major surgery, there is no reason to think that she is not competent to consent to an abortion. A parental notification law, such as House Bill 2633, would create a barrier to health care access for teenage girls. This barrier would affect the patient-provider relationship, for we as providers would not be able to offer all of the choices medically available to girls who find themselves pregnant without the permission from someone else. The trust that a teenager has in her health care provider is essential to providing comprehensive care. By forcing a parent to be involved in a teenager's decision, a third party is inappropriately forced between the patient and provider. This would affect not only her autonomous decision to have an abortion, but also her comfort in discussing future confidential issues with her health care provider. By stepping between a patient and her provider, House Bill 2633 not only violates patient confidentiality and safety, it also jeopardizes the important trust between a teen and her health care provider. The Oregon Chapter of Medical Students of Choice strongly opposes House Bill 2633, and we urge you to do the same. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Chairman Shetterly, the committee. My name is Jillian Casson. I'm the State Public Affairs Chairwoman for Oregon of National Council of Jewish Women. I'm member of the Portland section, and we are over 500 members. The organization is the oldest Jewish women's volunteer organization in the country. We were founded in 1896, and we were established in Portland in 1893. And we have long been a voice for those unable to speak out for themselves. This is our Jewish values which have inspired us to work together to develop community services in our communities for both the Jewish and the non-Jewish members of our society. We research, we do education, and we provide these community services, and we advocate for these issues. We have provided in Portland section Insights Teen Parent Program, the Child Care Providers Resource Room. We administered the West Side Youth Service Center for 10 years. We care about babies, children, teenagers, and women, but we are against the parental notification law. We do not believe that they strengthen families or prevent abortions, but do endanger the lives of young women. And other people here today have reiterated those issues many times, and we feel that it is the children who do not feel comfortable reporting to their parents their situation who are the ones we are most concerned about. We are concerned about the dangers to the children, as such as Becky Bell, that my co-panelist has mentioned, and we feel that the young women who have abortion are much less likely to endanger their lives than those who complete a pregnancy and give birth. And we feel that the freedom of access to abortion for all those who choose to seek it must not be curtailed. As Jewish women, we care about the health and safety of young women. And we thank the committee for the opportunity to testify at this time, and we urge you to oppose House Bill 2633. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maura Roach, and I'm here today for the Pro-Choice Coalition of Oregon. I'm not submitting any written testimony, but wanted to provide the committee with a clarification of a few points that have come up so far, and also provide the committee with copies of the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's a research that's been referred to several times throughout the testimony regarding the case of Minnesota where abortion numbers fluctuated after similar legislation was passed. In addition to that, I also wanted to submit for the record the position of several organizations, American Medical Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, et cetera, as well as the American Psychiatric Association, all of which oppose this kind of legislation, and clarify for the record that during his tenure as the Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, who many of you probably recall, was very pro-life in his personal beliefs, studied the phenomenon that's been presented today regarding so-called post-abortion trauma syndrome, and neither the American Psychological Association nor C. Everett Koop was able to establish that as a psychiatric disorder formally designated, and I just wanted to share that with the committee because I think that's been discussed at length today, and while I do think that I'm sure people have varied and different reactions to having had an abortion in their lives. For some, as we've heard, it's a relief, and for others, it's been more complicated than that and possibly something of a crisis in their life. There has been no recognition of any particular syndrome associated with that phenomenon. In addition, I just wanted to restate for the law regarding minors' access to services, and I believe Katie actually went over this in her testimony as well, that from the age of 15 on, teenagers are able to consent to all forms of medical treatment, and for things like sexually transmitted disease and contraception, they're able to consent to that at an earlier age. And I think there have been some misstatements about that status as well, and wanted to make sure the committee understood what the current law is on that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Questions? Thank you for those. Those are good.
Sure.
Okay. My effort has been to balance pro and con. We're getting down to the point in the witness list where I don't have anybody signed up, according to my reading of the list anyway, that is here to testify in favor that's on the sheet. If I'm wrong, would you please let me know? Okay, we'll finish up then the witness list based on the folks we have. Ruth Russell, Tina Empole, and Lynn Parton. And I'll say if there's anybody still in the over... I saw a whole group come in once. Were you all the overflow room people? Okay, if there is anybody in the overflow room, I'll invite you to come on up because there's room, and especially if there's somebody in the overflow room who would be interested in testifying, we'd like to have you up here. Please have a seat, and we'll let you proceed in your own order.
Can we get to
this? Sure. Aaron, thanks. Okay. You're taken care of.
I guess since I'm on the left, I'll go first.
Okay.
My name is Lynn Parton, and I am representing the Women's Rights Coalition. We're opposed to House Bill 2633. We appreciate the opportunity today to speak to you on this. I will keep it very short because practically everything that I was going to say has already been said. I would like to give you a little background on the Women's Rights Coalition, which is a private nonprofit statewide organization comprised of other private nonprofit organizations such as the Oregon Student Association, Oregon Women's Political Caucus, Oregon Chapters of the American Association of University Women, League of Women Voters, National Organization of Women, and many others. This is our 25th anniversary of dedication to equality and security for all of Oregon's women. A number of people, on the back of my testimony, there's a copy of the Oregonian article, the editorial, that actually a lot of people have been referring to without actually citing it. Some people have even read at length from it without referencing it, so I thought I would just provide that source material. Some of the things we particularly agree with in there are that the premise of, in the ideal world, no teenager would have an abortion without the support of her parents. You've heard the good news over and over again about 3/4 of teens do, in fact, involve their parents in decision-making, and as the Oregonian notes, of the remaining group, the question is moot for roughly 2/3 who are emancipated minors or for whom there is no responsible parent. So basically, we're talking about a group of about 100 young women, and these are the ones for whom we have the most fear. You heard Sound Reasons, the Spring Adams case with the pregnancy as a product of incest and her father who had impregnated her, killing her when she tried to get an abortion. You've heard of the Becky Bell case. Basically, the government can't remedy with a registered letter or, as in the case of the Dash 8 amendments, a certified letter, these kinds of negative family environments. I can really appreciate why there would be the time delays and why there would be the increases in abortions in neighboring states. If you think about somebody who is, say, 17, and she's terrified and she's somebody who can't talk to her parents, and what she's looking at is facing a quasi-judicial proceeding in which her lawyer almost certainly is going to be paid by the same people making the decision about whether or not she is going to be able to have this procedure. In litigation, you always take a client into the courtroom, let them see what it's going to look like in advance. If you can, you do it with witnesses and so forth. Here's somebody by definition alone and facing this tremendously daunting structure that is set up, probably, she feels, in many cases against her. Again, minors from 15 and up can get prenatal care, have a C-section, and become a mother, all without parental notification or consent. This bill would force older teens to involve their parents against their better judgment. It would force doctors to do the same in violation of their professional responsibility for doctor-patient confidentiality. We agree. We all want to prevent teen pregnancies. We all want to encourage healthy family communications, but this bill achieves neither of these goals, so we would ask you to please vote against it. Thank you. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, if I can.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Chair Shetterly and the rest of the committee. My name is Tina Emple, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the members of the Corvallis Chapter of the National Organization for Women. The Corvallis Chapter has served the Lynn and Benton area for an excess of 20 years, and we reach a readership of our newsletter of over 1,400 people. We oppose HB 2633, and we urge you to vote no. What we see here in this bill is an attempt to punish and further disenfranchise female teens who, for whatever reason, cannot involve their parents in the decision to terminate an unwanted pregnancy. It's not reasonable to think that communication skills can be forced on high-risk families. It's not reasonable to think that a female teen who has been victim of incest or rape is going to be forced to communicate to a family from which her victimizer is likely to be a member. It's not, we believe, the act of a reasonable member of society to support a bill that harms the very people that we need to protect from further harm. We fail to see what good can come of marginalizing these female teens to the point that they would run away from home or even attempt self-abortion or suicide. Teenage pregnancy is one of the most prevailing problems facing the ever-increasing problem of juvenile crime. It's also the number one reason that female teens drop out of school. Dropping out of school severely impairs the female teen from gaining a good earning potential. No earning potential puts the female teen into poverty. Poverty puts the female teen's children into high risk to be perpetrators of crime. Who can possibly think that making the choice of terminating an unwanted pregnancy more difficult for a female teen is going to be a good thing for our society? In our opinion, no reasonable person would contribute to this vicious cycle. We support parental involvement in our plea. We do not support legislation that would impair the other 25% of female teens from a safe and legal medical procedure. I would also like to add on a personal note, having had been a legislative assistant here in the last session, that I've heard some of the testimony before regarding lives that have gone astray. Only in that case, the lives had gone astray not because of parental notification, but because they had once witnessed two men kissing. I would also like to point out, as an Oregonian, that I'm a little wary of statistics that say how Oregonians are going to vote. For example, I sat in on the hearing where the statistics proved that overwhelmingly Oregonians were in favor of recriminalizing marijuana. That, in fact, didn't happen at the ballot. I also sat in on a hearing where statistics proved that Oregonians overwhelmingly regretted the decision to do death with dignity. That also was not correct. I would like to encourage the members of this committee to look at the history of how Oregonians have voted in this issue before they make their decision. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify, and I would restate that Corvallis Now does not support passage of this bill to limit choices for female teens. We urge you to oppose HB 2633. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Ruth Russell, and I come to you as a retired public health person, worked 30 years in public health, and 10 of them was in the area of maternal and child health. But, however, today I'm not here representing a public health perspective. I'm here representing the Oregon Catholics for Free Choice. This is a national and international organization dedicated to research and education to assure that reproductive choice is available to women throughout the world and to reduce the need for abortion. I am a practicing Catholic, and the reason that I particularly want to speak on this bill is because myself and many other thousands of Catholics around the world believe in a very ancient truth, and that is that man was endowed with a conscience, a free will, and an intellect. And we need to exercise that, and in that, we need to follow our conscience. And no one in church or no one in government has a right to define what that should be when it comes to personal moral decisions. Now, this is held so strongly by many Roman Catholics around the world that some of us are speaking out against our hierarchy, because that is not the current position of the hierarchy as far as reproduction goes and abortion. So we are not in alignment with the hierarchy of the Catholic Church on this particular issue. I won't go into some of the testimony because you've heard it from other experts. My information is that the current American Medical Association concluded that parental notification laws increase gestational age at which induced pregnancy termination occurs, thereby increasing the risk associated with the procedure. That in and of itself would be an immoral thing to do if that is the case. And I would defer, I know there's been different opinions on this over the afternoon, but I would really defer to Grant Higginson, who is your health officer, who happens to be a man who's board certified in preventive medicine and an expert in epidemiology, and I would be very confident that any data that he supplied to you would be not biased, but very would probably clear up the confusion that might exist around this issue. And I'm willing to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Just for committee information, we're getting down to the last group or two of witnesses, so we should be. I think we'll finish before committee meeting starts tomorrow morning.
Joke, right?
It's a joke. Truth is, we won't be. I have. I just want to make sure we didn't make changes on these, so if I... Well, I'll just see if they're here. Jill Brunel, I have Adrian Hamilton, and Jamie Rothbard. Two. And three. Okay. Before you begin, let me just check something here, if I may. Jeannie Schlottman, why don't you come on? She's not with us anymore. Okay.
She's alive. She's not here.
Yeah. Has the hearing gone on that long? How about Jennifer Inman Lane? Is that right? Okay. All right. Well, then.
These are our last three, Mr. Chair?
I guess they are.
Okay.
Please.
Well, it's very nice.
I'll let you begin, if you would, as with everybody else today, just state your name for the record when you begin to testify.
Okay. Chairman Shetterly, members of the committee, my name is Jill Brunel, and I'm a 22-year-old senior at Oregon State University who has lived in Portland, Oregon, in the same house my entire life. I thank you for your willingness to allow me to share the realities with you that young women struggle with today. I stand before you, well, actually, I sit before you, as a young woman who could be your daughter or your niece or your friend or somebody who watches your younger children while you're out for the evening. I sit before you today to urge you to vote no on HB 2633. I'm also here to serve as a voice for young women who will be rendered voiceless by the passage of this bill. Issues pertaining to choice touch my heart in ways I never thought possible. I had no choice. But to find my voice and find the courage to heal after being raped.
1996. My voice was completely taken from me. Mandatory parental notification laws strip young women of their voice and their right to choose what happens to their bodies. Just as the person who chose to rape me took away my right to choose what happened to my body. But I was lucky. I didn't have to tell my parents I had been raped and that I was pregnant. I now work as an advocate for survivors of sexual assault, and I work with young women. And I want you to know what it's like to look into the eyes of a 15-year-old who's just been raped, of a 15-year-old who possesses absolutely no voice to talk about her experience, and of a 15-year-old whose parents have never been there for her. And now she's desperate for a way out. This is complicated by finding out she is now pregnant. I met her a little over a year ago while I was doing a sexual assault presentation at a high school here in Oregon. I looked into those eyes and I listened to her voice, which was a voice who would rather commit suicide or be beaten in the stomach with a baseball bat to induce a miscarriage than to put her trust back in parents who have failed her in every way possible. Under no circumstances was she ever going to tell her parents she was pregnant. I'm here today to tell you that parental notification laws will not change her decision. The reality is that mandatory parental notification will only intensify her decision. It could force her out of desperation to actions that could threaten her health and take her life. I urge you to vote no on HB 2633. Today you've heard the voices of those who share the pains and the realities of young women who will be hurt by this bill. I realize that 25% is a small number, but I've been told that parents never fully recover from the loss of a child. Please don't force other parents, as Becky Bell's parents were forced to do, to try to make peace with the loss of their daughter by passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Adrienne Hamilton, and I am 20 years old. I have lived in Eugene, Oregon, all of my life, and am now a student at Oregon State University. I'm here to testify today in opposition of House Bill 2633. As a teenager, I became pregnant. 3 days after the pregnancy was confirmed, I went home for Christmas vacation. For the month of December, I lived in my parents' house with this secret. I did not feel as though I could tell my parents. Being an only child, my parents had placed a lot of faith in my succeeding in life. From a young age, my mother, my aunts, and most of the women in my family made it very clear to me that getting pregnant before marriage was a huge mistake. I heard the way they spoke about other people's children who had gotten pregnant and what a waste of a future it was. Although they are loving and caring people, I knew that I could not endure the amount of disappointment that they would have felt in me. Hiding it from them was very difficult. I was sick every morning and every night. At one point, when I was really not feeling well, my mother joked with me about how she thought I might be pregnant. The fact that she had acted as though this wasn't even a real possibility, but a joke, made me realize how appalled she would be if she knew the truth. On another occasion, I was riding in the car with my father when we pulled up behind a car at a stoplight. In huge red letters, the bumper sticker read, "Abortion is murder." Tears welled up in my eyes when I realized that this is how people thought of me, and at that moment I knew I wouldn't be able to tell anyone about the pregnancy, especially not my parents. I decided that the best decision for me as a teenager who was still in school was to not continue with the pregnancy. This decision was a very difficult one. If I had been required to inform my parents or anyone else about my decision, it would have been even more difficult. I felt as though no one would support me and everyone would think of me as a murderer or as a completely irresponsible person. I didn't want to see the disappointment or the judgment in anyone else's eyes. When it came time to actually have the abortion, I had to drive all the way to Portland for 2 days in a row. This is over 100 miles each way. So my boyfriend and I made the drive, making up excuses to my roommate and friends about why we would be home late. The people at the clinic were wonderful. They explained in detail the options of adoption, parenting, and abortion. They wanted to make sure that I was completely positive in my decision. In addition, they started me on birth control after the procedure so that something like this would be ensured not to happen in the future. In addition, they also explained in great detail to me exactly what would be happening during the procedure and answered any questions that I had. During the procedure, there was a nurse there to hold my hand and to make me as comfortable as possible. Although it was obviously a hard experience, both physically and emotionally, it was not the nightmarish vision that so many people have painted before you here today. HB 2633 would not have stopped me from deciding to have an abortion. In fact, my parents probably would have encouraged the abortion. I do, however, believe that it would have caused me to have the abortion later because of how terrifying it would have been to have to tell my parents. HB 2633 would not have made my decision any more well-informed. It certainly would not have made communication between my family and myself any easier. It actually would have made the relationship between us weaker. I know they will always love me, but I would have always felt as though I had greatly disappointed my entire family. Thank you.
Chairman Shetterly, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you all for letting me speak today. My name is Jamie Rothbard, and I'm a senior at Southern Oregon University. I've worked at the Women's Resource Center for the last 2 years. Prior to my enrollment at SOU, I spent the first 17 years of my life in La Pine, a rural town in Central Oregon. I come forward today to share an experience that occurred while I was still living in La Pine. I share my testimony so that this committee may better appreciate the experiences of young women whom this bill seeks to affect. Furthermore, I come forward to urge this committee to defeat House Bill 2633. I'm here to represent one 17-year-old teen who was faced with an unintended pregnancy. However, it wasn't until her second trimester that she decided to seek help from an external entity. Over 3 months into her pregnancy, she had no resources. There was only one certainty upon which she was determined. She would terminate the pregnancy. Living in a rural and conservative area, she was without resources to further her decision. Living in a highly devout Mormon family, she was also without support. By the time she decided to confide in me, she had already taken to drastic measures. In effort to induce a miscarriage, she began engaging in highly risky activities. One night, after consuming excessive alcohol and controlled substances, she spent an extended lapse of time in a jacuzzi. On many occasions, she would beat herself in the stomach and starve herself. She came to despise her body because of the fetus within it. For myself, there was only one course of action. It was not invested in notifying her parents, nor questioning her decision not to involve them. Her inability to get through to her parents and the impossibility of being honored in such a decision had already been established over the years of our friendship. The only priority was to bring her to a safe place where pregnancy could be terminated rather than her own health jeopardized. For two young women in Central Oregon, that place was over 200 miles away, and the journey was met with many hardships. By the time we arrived to the clinic, she was too far along for the procedure to take place. There was one last clinic in Portland that would possibly perform the abortion, and it was our only hope. Fortunately, she was accepted, and the abortion was performed. Almost 5 years later, we are still met by many challenges, but they are within the context of the university that we both attend, and we attended together. My friend, I'll call her Julie to protect her confidentiality, has long progressed beyond the days that her physical and mental existence were plagued by thoughts of self-destruction and self-loathing. I sit here today horrified to just imagine what would have happened if a parental notification law had been in effect at that time. I certainly would not be telling you all this story that I'm telling right now. Had such a law been in effect, then the waiting period required would have carried her into her third trimester. Yet I am not so confident as to assume that I would have been made aware of the hell that my friend was suffering. If a safe abortion would have demanded the notification of her parents, it's a fact that Julie would have been successful in self-inducing a miscarriage. She would have rather kept the shame that she felt pent up within herself rather than to impose that upon her parents and her three younger siblings. The blocks and barricades that stood before Julie in resolving her pregnancy were difficult in and of themselves. However, her decision was not. Her mind was determined, and accordingly so too were her actions. To say that parental consultation would have complicated matters is an understatement. To impose such a barricade will not benefit young women such as Julie. Conversely, it will undermine their convictions, and it will drive them to dangerous measures. No parent would want his or her child to suffer the way Julie could have. This decision must remain in the hands of young women. We must trust their judgment as to who they will notify, for they are the only ones who can make such determinations. And you will not find this on my testimony, but I feel very important to share my own experience, because I have had an abortion also. And I feel like it needs to be heard today that I am a woman who is proud of her decision. I am not experiencing any pain or guilt from the decision I made. I am quite happy, and as a religious person, my abortion brought me closer to God, because I'll tell you something, I was scared about what was going to happen, but I knew that a choice had to be made. And I felt that God was with me during that abortion, and he's here with me right now. She, whatever God is, okay? I feel that presence right now with me as I'm talking to you, and that brings me meaning. And I want you all to hear that. And I cannot tell my mother about what happened, and I'll tell you why, too. Because my mother was almost killed in a back alley abortion when she was my age. So I want you to understand that this whole issue is very important to me. And it's very important to me that you hear that this is a choice that resides within the individual, and nobody can impose that on anybody else. So I'll ask you to please defeat House Bill 2633. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Werbelow.
This is our last panel.
This is our last panel.
I just wanted to thank all the people who have come up and testified today from wherever you've come, and especially I want to thank Jamie. She had to come a long way from Ashland. I've made that drive a few times, and it is quite a wave. I'd also like to say that, again, no matter which side you were testifying from, there's been some very personal stories here today, and it probably has not been easy, but I thank you for sharing them with us. And actually, until we can all, this is a subject that people have difficulty talking about, just the whole realm of sexual relationships and results and so forth. And until we can talk freely about these things, we're not going to be able to resolve some of the problems that surround them. So I thank you all for coming. I think it's been very important.
I want to echo that. I think, too, I think that this has been one of the toughest hearings. Representative Wells has been here for 3 terms, as has Representative Werbelow, 2 terms for me, one of the toughest hearings, just in terms of the personal and heartfelt nature of the testimony about a very difficult issue. And I do want to thank the people from all of you from both sides who have been here either testifying or in support of those who are testifying. And I hope you felt that you've been honestly heard and listened to. Your testimony has had impact on us, and we are certainly not going to take this bill into work session today. We'll take some time with it. We've got quite a few other things to get out this week that we're kind of pressed for. So, say, if you were expecting to watch the wheels in motion and a result today, I'll disappoint you on that score. But I do want to thank you for taking the time and making the effort, all of you, to come to town and be a part of the process. I think it was very, very enlightening. It was a tough hearing, but we had some frank discussion about a tough issue that's going to be helpful to the committee. Anybody else before we close? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just echo that. It's been very
difficult to listen to the stories today. And I appreciate all of you, even those who don't share the same view as I have certainly had very difficult stories in their life. And I just appreciate you coming today, all of you.
Okay. With that, then, we are adjourned.